The views and opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect those of 55KRC, The Talk Station, and Clear Channel Worldwide.
Welcome to Ballistic Radio, Cincinnati's only gun talk show. Join us. We're going to explore the topic of firearms and your rights as a law-abiding citizen. Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Kyle's Gun Shop in Finneytown, your source for premium firearms and ammunition. Now here's your host, John Johnston, on 55KRZ, the talk station.
Good evening and welcome to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Kyle's Gun Shop in Finneytown, your source for premium firearms and ammunition. I'm your host, John Johnston. As always, check out ballisticradio.com and facebook.com/ballisticradio. A lot of cool things happen there. Co-hosting with me this evening, Mr. Andy Ulrich. Andy, how's it going?
Pretty good. Glad to be back after a little break.
Yeah, no, I'm glad to have you back. You just came back from some classes yourself, didn't you?
I took handgun 4 and 5 at TDI and had a blast.
Nice.
Yeah.
Is that your experiment with the red dot working out?
I think so. Yeah. I really, if I put the time into it, I think it's going to be a good platform.
Cool.
I really like its accuracy. I like its fastness.
Very cool. I actually got to play one the last day or so and haven't figured out how I feel about it yet, but we'll see. So tonight we're going to be talking with Todd Green of pistoltraining.com and also of rampageforthecure.org, which is the charity I've been talking about the last 3 or 4 weeks. But we're going to be talking with Todd about becoming an instructor, probably his 1911 9mm that just keeps running, north of 50,000 rounds now. And also his charity, just because Archer references will be made during the explanation. So without further ado, Mr. Todd Green. Todd, are you there?
I am.
Excellent. Thank you for joining us this evening on short notice.
Thanks for having me on.
No, it was, I said this on the forum, but you were the first one that answered my text, so I figured, hey. Yeah. But the joke sounded funnier in my head. Thanks, Andy.
I'll laugh for you.
Oh, appreciate it. Anyway, for those that don't know, Todd, can you introduce yourself briefly?
Sure. Name's Todd Green. I run a company and a website called pistoltraining.com that's obviously devoted to various training stuff for handguns. Prior to that, I was in the firearms industry, in the military and federal law enforcement sales and service and training side of things for Beretta and Sig Arms, which is now Sig Sauer.
Excellent. So, suffice to say, you know a little bit about toting a handgun around and using one effectively.
Yeah, I hope so.
Yeah, just a little. So, it's going to be. I was kind of curious to get into the show because you see a lot of instructors these days, and I've actually been doing a bit of that myself, but there's not necessarily a clear path on how you start doing that. And I was just curious, how did you become an instructor?
So I first started teaching the way I think a lot of people do. I was taking classes with a particular school, had taken 3 or 4 different classes from them, kept coming back for more, and they asked me if I could help out with some of their beginner-level kind of classes. And from there, I kind of climbed up the ranks and started helping with their more advanced stuff. And that was really most of the teaching I did until I got hired by the NRA in the late 90s. And I worked at their firearms range at their headquarters in Virginia. There was a group of the folks there called Senior Firearms Instructors was the name of the group. And through there, I started doing a bunch of really, for the most part, just concealed carry permit licensing kind of classes. And that was most of what I did until I got hired by Beretta and then Sig. And from there, I started doing some more higher level stuff, doing classes primarily for the company's customers, military units and law enforcement agencies and stuff like that.
Okay. And it's actually interesting you bring that up because you have trained a lot of military and law enforcement, but you don't have a military or law enforcement background, if I remember correctly, right?
Nope, not at all.
Now, that brings up an interesting point, and I've seen this argued online quite a bit. We're talking with Todd Green from pistoltraining.com. What kind of background do you think someone should have if they're going to be a firearms instructor? And obviously your answer might be a little biased, but just curious what your thoughts are.
You know, I don't think there's a really good answer to that. I think the most important thing is, you know, you follow the adage, always stay in your lane. So if you're someone who's been carrying a gun concealed and been shooting a lot and you have been doing that for 10 or 20 years and you're good at it and you've put a lot of thought into it and you've trained and you've done all that, you can probably turn around and teach some of that stuff. At the same time, that person who's been a private citizen carrying concealed and living a pretty ordinary private citizen's life probably should not be teaching 12-man room clearing tactics, explosive breaching, or any of those kind of things. So I think the really important thing is to always understand what it is you're teaching and how your personal experience and your personal skill set apply to it, and just don't get outside of that lane.
Okay. So, and that's another interesting thing. As far as the background bias that some instructors have, now you bring that up as far as people staying on topic, but have you noticed even in the things that people teach that bias comes into play?
You know, no, sure. I think that, you know, if you go take a class from someone who has 20 years of high-level military, let's say special operations experience, the vast majority of the stuff that he's done has been team-based. And so some of what that guy is going to be teaching is probably based on the concept of having, you know, 3 or 12 or 100 other guys in the same vicinity as you that are all on your side, and possibly with the idea that, you know, a lot of what they do involves, you know, hours or days of planning, and there can easily be that same, you know, 4 or 12 or 100 bad guys on the other side of the line. And I think that has an impact on what you teach and how you teach. But for the most part, I think that what most people are going to take a class for, learning sort of fundamental tactics, fundamental shooting skills, most of those biases, even if they exist, they probably aren't a bad thing. I don't think you need a particular background or a particular bias to understand the concept of, if someone's shooting at you, hiding behind cover is better than not, and that kind of thing. For the most part, I think it's always important to understand where your instructor is coming from so that you can make intelligent choices about how pertinent a particular teaching point may be to you personally. But for the most part, what you find, the more you take classes from guys from very divergent backgrounds, competitive shooters, law enforcement guys, special operations guys, you start to see that most of the basics really are very similar from person to person. And so there's not a big concern about learning that stuff from one guy over the other. And the other thing I always try to really point out to people is, maybe you're not going to be taking a class from the guy that would be ideal for you if you had the ability to take a class from anybody on the planet. But training is always better than not training. And so even if you learn something today that 6 years from now you decide, oh, you know, I don't want to do it that way anymore, you're still way better off to have learned a good way of doing it, even if maybe you didn't learn the best, coolest, most high-speed way of doing it from the beginning.
All right, and we'll talk about that a little bit more. Also, we're going to talk about your 9mm 1911 that keeps running, but right now it is time for the commercial. You're sure. Listening to Ballistic Radio on 55KRC, the talk station.
Wealthy and wise. The Steve Perrin Coordinated Financial Planning Studios. This is 55KRC, the talk station.
Welcome back to Ballistic Radio on 55KRC, the talk station, brought to you by Kyle's Gun Shop in Finneytown, your source for premium firearms and ammunition. We are talking with Mr. Todd Green of PistolTraining.com. We were just discussing instructoral? No, that's not a word. Help me out here, Andy. Come up with a word. You want to make one up? No.
I'm going to let you just hang.
Thanks. I appreciate that. It's good to have you back in the studio, Andy.
You got to have somebody to ride you a little bit.
Oh, the phrasing. Boom. Anyway, back to Todd Green. Todd, are you there?
I am.
You could have jumped in there, too. I had you off hold. Just Oh, man, one of those evenings. So we were talking about bias and how that affects what you pick up from certain instructors and all that. I'd kind of like to finish with that real quick, and then we'll move forward just a bit. You said something interesting as far as training, taking a class now is better than not, was essentially the gist of it.
Correct.
Do you think that people sort of go into a paralysis of trying to choose an instructor or a class and end up don't do anything at all?
I certainly think that that's not uncommon. Not everyone does it, obviously, but I've met more than a few people, you know, over the past few years who've told me that, you know, they waited 2 years to come take a class with me, or that they had waited however long to go take a class with, you know, another instructor that kind of travels the circuit on a big name basis. And really, I mean, I'm certainly happy to have those students in my class, but depending on what it is you're trying to learn, you don't really need to go to some famous person, or like we were talking about, you don't need to go to somebody who's got a, you know, an absolutely world-class military or law enforcement or competition record or something. If you're new to this, or even if you've just never taken a formal class before, even if you've been shooting for 20 years, if you finally reached a point where you want to learn how to be better, you don't need to go to somebody who's super famous. You don't need to go to the one guy on the internet who your seven best internet buddies said was the person they go to. You can go most places around the country. You can find a local instructor or a local school that's got a good reputation, and you can start taking classes from them. Maybe you'll never take a class outside of there. Maybe that'll inspire you to go take classes from other people when the opportunity exists. But I really do believe that most people are far better served by getting some good formal training than trying to find the absolute perfect ideal mesh of what they think they need and what some particular instructor claims that he teaches.
Yeah, no, and that makes a lot of sense. And honestly, I've been, and I'm sure you have too, I've been to quite a few instructors' classes, and I've picked up things that I like. There's some stuff that I don't end up using after the fact, and like you said, there's not one perfect instructor. Moving forward slightly, if one were to want to work on becoming an instructor, they were interested in teaching, what would be some things that perhaps they should think about before they start doing that?
Well, there are a couple of things that I would recommend. One of them involves thinking about the administrative side of being an instructor, because not a lot of people think about that. The other and probably the more important one is the safety side. To start with that first, I learned a lot about running a line, running a number of people on a firing line simultaneously by working at a firing range at the NRA headquarters, and kind of just you over time, you build up a little bit of a radar where you figure out, hey, that's the guy who's about to point his gun in the wrong direction, or that's someone who doesn't know how to handle a loaded gun properly. And so if there's a firing range or a shooting club in your area, I would really recommend you go, if you have to, volunteer, and just get used to being on a firing line, watching people handling guns and picking up on when they are doing things right and when they're doing things wrong. Another really great way to do this is to get involved in competition shooting, and that not only brings the benefit of the shooting itself, but if you can start to help by being a range officer and running shooters at matches, you really quickly learn to focus on somebody, the exact details of what they're doing with a gun. And one of the great things about most of the more common shooting sports like IDPA and USPSA is they've got really bright line rules, and if someone violates one of those rules, you kick them out. And I really do honestly believe that one of the best experiences an instructor can have is getting used to the idea of telling someone, I know you paid your money, but now you're leaving because you're unsafe. Because a lot of instructors are uncomfortable doing that. They see the student as a customer, and they don't want to kick their customer out. But your real number one responsibility as an instructor is to make sure that everybody is safe. And so getting into the habit of enforcing safety rules, even if it means you have to be a little tough, is a really good thing to learn. On the admin side, I think folks need to have a good idea about what certifications they need or want. That can often have an impact on whether or not You can get insurance. And I personally would not teach without insurance, and I wouldn't take a class from someone who didn't have insurance. And then other things, just like, you know, understanding the need for a lesson plan. You don't want to be one of these instructors, and I'm sure you've seen this before. I certainly have. You don't want to be one of those instructors who people show up and you start pulling things out of your butt of what we're going to do today. Next drill we're going to do is, wait, hold on, let me think about it. Okay, I've got something. That's not what you're really looking for. You're looking for having a lesson plan so that you know what you're going to be teaching, you know how long it's going to take, you know about how many rounds your students are going to shoot, you have a good idea of what you're going to do if something goes wrong, if the students are struggling somewhere or not. Having that kind of a roadmap built in for a class not only makes you look a lot more professional, but it makes it so much easier to actually run a class.
Okay. Would you say that that's probably one of the more common errors that a newer instructor will make, as far as not doing the homework beforehand, as far as like a lesson plan and things of that nature?
Sometimes. I really do think it varies a lot. There are some folks who, when they become instructors, the very first thing they do is spend 7 weeks locked in a cave coming up with what they think is the world's greatest lesson plan, and then it fails miserably because it's not realistic. And there are a lot of instructors who really do, the first few times they teach a class, they're kind of doing it by the seat of their pants, and then they kind of get into a flow, and they kind of know by memory how they want to do things, but it's not really the same as having a lesson plan that's got, like I said, a roadmap built in for when things don't go right and everything else.
Right, and it's always good to have a fallback plan as far as that goes. As far as attending classes as an instructor, do you go to a lot of other instructors' courses, and have you run into any backlash or people that don't want you in their class because, hey, that guy might take my ideas?
No. I go to other people's classes every year. I try to take at least a couple of classes every year, sometimes from people I've trained with before, sometimes with new people. I have yet to find anybody who kind of thinks that they have some secret thing that only they should be able to teach. I'm sure there are guys out there like that, but I haven't run into it. I think most instructors are at the other end of the spectrum. Most instructors think that they have figured out the secret magic of life, and they want everyone to go out and spread the word of how awesome their technique is. So, no, I don't think that that's really not much of a problem. And I know I've had plenty of firearms instructors come through my program, and kind of like you were saying before, there are some things that they're going to like and they're going to take back to their students or their agency or their unit, and there are things that don't work for them or they don't like, and they just toss that away and move on.
So what are your thoughts as far as sticking with that topic? We're talking with Todd Green, pistoltraining.com. Sticking with that topic of being able to take an idea that you like and not pay attention to the rest of them, I've been to certain classes, and I'm not going to name any names, obviously, but I've been to certain classes where if you do not do it the way they want you to do it in class, it is the end of the world. What are your thoughts on that?
I think that that's really unfortunate. Consider myself very lucky. I've got over 1,000 hours of formal classes that I've taken from other people over the past 20 years. I can not remember a specific time where someone told me I had to do it their way. I think that's just a really bad attitude. What I tell folks in class is, you've paid to come take a class from me. I teach certain things a certain way. I'm going to show you how I do them. I'm going to tell you why I do them that way. I think it's worth your time and your money to at least try it my way, because otherwise you kind of wasted all this time coming to the class. But if you get to the end of it and the way I do a draw or a reload or tie my shoes or whatever, if it doesn't work for you, you don't have to do it. You're not hurting my feelings at all. My job is not to turn you into a copy of me or someone who's an acolyte that's going to go out and spread the word for me. I want you to be a better shooter, and what works for you might not work for somebody else and vice versa. My job is to show you what I do and tell you why. Your responsibility is to figure out how that fits into your overall toolbox and how you want to adopt or not adopt various things.
Okay. So I had a thought and it ran away. It's interesting that you mention being the best shooter that someone can be. I've actually, the positive experiences I've had with instructors, the ones that I really like, It seems that there's zero ego involved, and it's all about just improving the student and not so much, hey, look at how great I am. Do you think that humility is something that as an instructor you should probably have?
I would love to answer yes. I don't think that most people would say that I have a lot of humility, and most of the, at least some of the best instructors that I've trained with are incredibly arrogant people. It's a bit like, you know, professional athletes. You usually don't find a guy who's at the top of his game who at the same time kind of acts like he's just average. So I think most people who have enough drive to excel tend to also have a certain amount of ego associated with it. You don't want someone who the ego is greater than the lesson, or the class becomes about, hey, let me tell you these 30 stories about me. But I don't think that it's necessarily bad to see an instructor who's proud of what he's accomplished.
Right. You actually just settled a bet for me that I just won, so hey.
Well, congratulations.
Hey, thank you. It's time for the commercial. When we get back, we're going to talk with Todd about his 1911 9mm, and also later on in the show, his new charity. Right now, you're listening to Ballistic Radio on 55KRC, the talk station. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio on 55KRC, the talk station, brought to you by Kyle's Gun Shop in Finneytown. Right now, we're talking with Todd Green of PistolTraining.com. If you have any questions, you can give us a call at 749-5500 or 1-800-823-8255. Try and get to your calls at the end of the evening if we are able to. So, Andy and I were just having a conversation during the break as to whether or not Jim put you up to just kind of looking at me when I look over thinking you were going to say something.
When it happens, it will be a total and complete surprise to you. We don't really want to fluster you.
Oh, okay. Cool. Well, Todd, how was your break on hold?
It was just great. Thank you. How about yours?
Oh, not too bad. One of those evenings. So how's the test going as far as the 9mm 1911 goes?
Gun continues to run like a sewing machine. It's been very impressive to me. It definitely has exceeded my expectations.
It seems like you've made a lot of other manufacturer fanboys cry as far as the killing of their assumptions in regards to a 9mm 1911.
You know, it's not like it was a $500 off the rack 1911. It was a gun that was built by the Springfield Armory Custom Shop. They had, you know, some world-class gunsmiths there who built a really fantastic gun, and it probably shouldn't surprise anybody that it runs well, but 9mm 1911s just have a reputation, and one that I certainly believed was true, and this has kind of shattered a lot of those myths, at least for me.
Yeah, and it always seems like you hear about, oh, this doesn't work that well, or that doesn't work that well, and then you ask somebody where they heard that from, and it's like, well, everyone just knows that. So anyway, so round count on the gun right now, where are you at?
A little over 56,000.
Jeez. Any new stoppages, part breakages, anything of interest going on with that?
No, nothing really. I would imagine that problems will start soon because I have committed the greatest sin a 1911 owner can commit. I took a gun that was running perfectly well, and I started screwing around with a file and a Dremel and all sorts of other tools that should be licensed by the federal government. So now my gun is no longer in the condition it was when it was sent to me, and instead it's been tuned by me. So I can only imagine whether it'll keep running or not.
That's just going to be – I'm curious to see. Hey, maybe you've got like a side extra career you can get into do it yourself.
No, definitely not.
No? So you're 56,000 rounds in. You didn't really shoot 1911s before this that much, as far as I'm aware. Has transitioning been difficult?
Oh, it definitely has. There are quite a few things that are different. This is the first gun that I've carried with a manual safety in quite a long time. I didn't find that to be overly difficult to transition to, but it's definitely something that's different. The gun has the controls are placed in a different location than what I'm used to. A lot of people love to talk about how the 1911 is the most ergonomic gun ever created. But really, I think what it is the 1911 is the most ergonomic gun for you if it's the gun that you always shoot and you grew up shooting. For me, it's almost the exact opposite. The mag catch is just a little bit too far for me to reach, so I have to shift the gun around in my hand, which I'd rather not do. Mm-hmm. The slide stop lever is farther than I can reach with my right thumb, my shooting hand thumb, so I have to do it with my support hand thumb, which is just slower no matter who you are. Mm-hmm. Little things like that. But, you know, it's been a really great challenge. It's been really interesting for me to pick up a gun that I have to seriously think about how do I need to change to make this work better for me than just using the techniques I've always used and struggling through.
Has it helped you at all as far as when you have students come through a class that are running 1911s, do you have a little bit more understanding of the platform?
I definitely think so. I mean, that's one of the major reasons that I do these tasks is it gives me, you know, a solid year or two of experience with a gun that in many cases isn't something I'm familiar with or isn't something that I've shot in a long time. I've had the benefit of, you know, at this point, I've done five of them. Two of them were double action guns. Two of them were striker fired guns. One of them is a cocked and locked 1911. I think having dedicated time on those different platforms is a benefit because you start to figure out little tricks and little idiosyncrasies. But having said that, especially on the 1911, I don't think that I'm near to a point where I'd say I've mastered it. And there are plenty of guys who have a lifetime of shooting the 1911 that could teach me all sorts of things. And I continue to take classes and talk to those guys trying to get better.
All right. Still talking with Todd Green of PistolTraining.com. As far as I've seen you mention this online, but I'm curious to expose the listeners to it. Do you have more fun shooting the 1911 than other guns you've had?
To a certain extent. You know, again, I find it to be a challenge, and that's something that's nice after kind of coasting for a while with guns that I was more familiar with. A lot of people think that the 1911 trigger is perfect, and mm-hmm. I think very much like with the controls and the ergonomics, if it's what you grew up with, it's great. But in my case, most of my really serious shooting was done with double action guns, so that very crisp break has actually been a challenge for me. And so working on that is good. And every time that you have a challenge like that and you get better, that's very rewarding. And so I've had a lot of motivation to go and practice as much as I could. And I see real gains when I practice. And so it's hard not to say that that's fun.
Yeah. And it's interesting that you mentioned as far as challenging yourself, even with a platform. And you've kind of followed this, I know, a little bit. I just switched to SIG earlier in the year and
yep.
have made I've been doing things that if you had asked me a year ago if I was capable of doing them, I'd have told you no. And let alone doing that with a double-action, single-action gun, which everyone says is supposed to be harder. For me, it's actually been the easiest gun to shoot well that I've played with.
Doesn't surprise me at all.
No. Out of curiosity, so do you still have a favorite out of the five test guns that you've played with?
A favorite, I would have to say, is the gun that I've got now, the 9mm 1911, just because it really has been fun and interesting and challenging and different. And it was the only gun that I've tested that I think people expected to have all sorts of problems and hasn't. Having said that, even though it's my favorite, it's probably not the gun I would recommend to the average person to go get. But for me personally, it's really changed my opinion a lot on 1911s in general and has sort of kicked off an interest in getting more of them and shooting them more in the future.
Okay. And I didn't prep you for this question beforehand, but I just thought of it. You mentioned recommending a handgun to somebody. If someone were starting out and you didn't have more than, let's say 2.5 minutes before the commercial came on to tell them about that handgun, what would you say?
They want to get their first handgun?
Yeah.
Get something that's safe. Get something that's a reputable, well-known brand quality-wise. Understand that to a certain extent, the amount of money you spend is going to be reflected in the quality of the gun, that a lot of people are going to tell you otherwise, that you have to be careful not to listen to somebody who has 7 guns from one particular company, and he might think those are awesome, but you might not be the most unbiased person, for the most part, if you get a gun from any of the really well-known companies, you're going to end up with a good gun. I would probably recommend, unless you have a good reason not to get a 9mm. Ammo's cheaper, gun's easier to control. It's going to be more fun and more motivational for you to go out and shoot. And beyond that, not a whole lot. You know, a lot of people are going to tell you that you should go out and find something at the gun shop that fits your hand really well. I think that's a mistake. The way a gun feels when you're fondling it in front of a glass case doesn't really have a whole lot to do with how it's going to work when you put it in your hands and you try to make it go boom. How the controls fit and stuff like that can be difficult to do. If you have the opportunity, I'm a big fan of people going to firing ranges that rent pistols, trying a few different things, see if something really feels right to you when you're shooting it versus something else. But at the end of the day, you know, when you talk about the major brands, Smith & Wesson, SIG, Glock, HK, there are huge agencies that issue guns from all of those companies. And so somewhere there's an agency of thousands of people who all have to carry that model gun. And if all of the people in that agency can make that gun work, you can probably make that gun work. So getting too wrapped up over the exact brand and model isn't something I'd worry about as much as some people might try to make you think.
Hmm. Andy, do you have a question?
I guess, Todd, when you have a student come from the class and you see they have a platform that you know is probably not going to make it through the class, you know there's certain guns out there that won't, do you say something to them or do you just let them run through the class until the gun pukes and then say, giving them a suggestion maybe to try something else or this would be a good fit for you?
And I'm actually going to pause you right there, Todd, because it's time for the next commercial.
Okay.
But if you want to think about that answer when we get back, yep. Todd will answer that one. Also, hear more about his new charity, Rampage for the Cure.org. Right now, you're listening to Ballistic Radio on 55KRC, the talk station.
Glenn Beck.
This will blow your mind.
Tomorrow at 9:06 on 55KRC, the talk station.
Welcome back to Ballistic Radio on 55KRC, the talk station. Brought to you by Kyle's Gun Shop in Finneytown. Right now, we are talking with Todd Green of PistolTraining.com. Todd, Andy had a question for you before the break as far as if you have a student come through a class with a gun that's unreliable, do you say something during the class or after the class? How do you handle that usually?
Well, I think two really important qualities of an instructor are that you have to be objective and you have to be honest. And you have to do that with yourself, and you also have to do it with your students. If I get a student who comes through class with a gun that I know from the beginning is probably not going to do well, I might pull him aside and ask him how it runs, ask him how much he's shot it, ask him if he's been through a class like this before, and just kind of get a feel for it. If there's a student who's got a gun and the gun really is struggling, and really that doesn't always have as much to do with the brand or the model as much as it has to do with the particular gun and whether somebody is screwed around with it, tried to modify it. In a lot of cases, you can even get somebody who just simply tried to detail strip it and clean it before the class, and they put it back together wrong. Somebody has a gun that's got a lot of problems. You have to kind of reach a point where you pull a student aside and say, I can't hold up class every 30 seconds so that you can unclear whatever problem you're having in your gun. I haven't had that happen too many times. I think most folks who come to a class like mine know that it's going to be a lot of rounds downrange in a short period of time, and they come with proven guns, but once in a while not. And I think that that's just one of the things you have to learn to deal with as an instructor is to kind of let people understand that what they might have chosen as their personal Excalibur might not really be up to the task.
Okay. It's just interesting, too, as far as people seem to get emotionally involved with their firearm for some reason and don't see it with the clearest of vision for some reason. Have you run into that?
Oh, sure, absolutely. And I don't think that I'm immune to that either. If you go out and you spend $5,000 on a custom gun, you're probably going to insist in your mind that it's way better than the $500 gun you could have bought instead.
Right.
Maybe in some ways it is, but in a lot of ways it's probably not. Most people don't have enough disposable income to just buy a different gun every week because they feel like it. So if they make a commitment to a gun, and especially, again, the folks who come to my classes are probably more likely to be practicing because they're worried about personal defense or something like that than just having fun at the range. You don't want to buy a gun that you think that your life might depend on someday and then have somebody else tell you that there's something out there that was better, because somehow in your mind that means that this gun's not going to be as useful if you ever have to defend your life. And that's silly, but a lot of people get very emotionally invested in their particular choice of firearm.
All right. So for those of you listening, don't do that. It's bad. We're going to switch gears a little bit. Now, you've been kind of intermittent with your practices this last year or so.
Yep.
And there's a new charity involved, too. So as much of that as you want to talk about?
Just started a charity called Rampage for the Cure. It's at rampageforthecure.org. And it's raising money for research that goes into treating cancer, in particular at Johns Hopkins University in Maryland. I'm dealing with a doctor who is world famous in his field and is working on some things that affect pretty much every type of cancer there is and how to treat it, prevent it. And we've raised about $10,000 over the past few weeks. We're hoping to raise a lot more.
Excellent.
Excellent.
And for those that don't watch Archer, A, you should. B, the Rampage for the Cure part is a direct, well, almost direct quote.
My wife won't let me watch it.
Why not?
I'm supposed to be a good boy.
Oh, that's not true at all. So do you have any other projects that you're working on right now, Todd?
Well, I'm in the process of having another custom 1911 built that's going to be my next test gun. Might not be quite as interesting for the folks who normally follow my tests, because it's probably not a gun that most of them are going to go out and buy, even if they like it. But it's going to certainly be interesting to me. And after doing these tests for the past few years, I finally decided to sit down and work with a very well-known, nationally known gunsmith and design what I think is going to be the
You can give ideal. Him a plug, Todd. I don't mind. Go ahead.
Oh, sure. It's Jason Burton at Heirloom Precision. And Jason is helping me design a gun that ideally is going to be the perfect carry gun for someone who carries in an appendix holster like I do. And I'm really very excited about it.
Excellent. That does bring up an interesting question that someone on the forum asked. As far as your previous test firearms, what happens to those? I mean, do you keep those? Do they go back to the manufacturer?
Yeah, I have them all. That's always one of the deals. One of the terms of the agreement with the manufacturer is that the guns are mine the day they arrive. And if something goes wrong or the test stops or something, the guns remain mine forever. The two HK pistols are actually with HK right now. They use them at trade shows and stuff like the SHOT Show. The Glock and the M&P are downstairs in my safe. And really, they just kind of sit there. They're memorabilia at this point more than anything.
Oh, okay. Don't ever take them out and shoot them just to see. Are you pretty much one platform at a time?
Yeah, pretty much that. But also just the test guns, for the most part, the test stopped because there was a reason to stop shooting the gun. Something broke or something wore out. And so even if I needed, say, a Glock 17, I wouldn't go get my test gun. I might go get the backup gun that they sent me and use that. But the actual test guns just kind of sit in the exact condition they were when the test stopped.
Okay. I'm gonna do this, and you're probably going to not answer and growl at me. But as far as the gadget for the Glock, any updates on that you feel like talking about, or you just want to know comment?
Sure. No, sure. We've had quite a few of them out in the hands of people that have been testing them. That was one of our primary responsibilities, we felt. Once we got the design set and we started manufacturing them, we took some of the first ones that we made and we gave them out to people who essentially filled out a questionnaire, told us how much they shot, so we know how many rounds are going through the gun. Is it a gun that's been modified or is it a stock gun? What caliber is it? And all those kind of things. And we're getting all that data back and just making sure before we release them to the public that this is something that's actually going to work as well as it worked in our private testing. You know, I've got a few of the gadgets now that have each gone, 20,000 rounds, but the fact that they worked for me on one gun isn't the same as they work for people with lots of different calibers. And we've got people everywhere from, you know, the sweltering swamps of Florida up to the tundras of Alaska testing these in different environments and under different circumstances. And so far we haven't had any real problems, and we're pretty happy with the design, and we're hoping that it'll continue to move forward and be available commercially next year.
Hey, perfect. And for those that don't know what we're talking about, can you briefly describe what that is?
Sure. The gadget's just a little thing that goes on the back. It replaces the slide plate on a Glock, which is that little piece of plastic that keeps everything inside the back of your Glock. And it's got two parts. One of them pivots, so it's kind of like a hammer almost, that it moves a little bit as you fire the gun. And so by putting your thumb on top of it, just the pressure of your thumb as you press the trigger, it prevents the trigger from moving, and therefore the gun can't go off. And almost solely its purpose is to add a certain level of safety to holstering the gun. And one of the most common ways people shoot themselves with their own gun is holstering it, either because they get their finger in the trigger and they don't realize it, or some piece of clothing or something like that gets in it. And so this eliminates that problem. A lot of people don't think they need to worry about it. We showed the gadget to a pretty large law enforcement agency not too long ago, and they basically told us that they trained so hard that their guys would never make that mistake. And then by bizarre and unfortunate coincidence, a couple of weeks later, one of their agents shot himself in the butt holstering his gun, and it wouldn't have happened if he'd had a gadget on his gun. So they're now talking to us again.
It's funny how you make absolute statements and then you are proven wrong almost immediately.
Yeah.
I guess as far as we got about 20, 30 seconds, what's one thing people should work on to get better?
Marksmanship. Nobody in the world is ever too accurate.
Ah, perfect. Hey, Todd, thanks so much for taking time out of your Sunday night. I really appreciate it, man.
Thank you for having me on.
Hey, you enjoy the rest of your Sunday. Thank you again. So next week, we'll be talking with Mike Sieglander of ShootingPerformance.com. Amongst other things, Mike is a former lead firearms instructor for the Federal Air Marshals, so it should be a really great and interesting show. Make sure you check out our website, BallisticRadio.com, and like our Facebook page at Facebook.com/BallisticRadio. I do all sorts of cool things there, so it's worth checking out. Thanks for listening, everyone. As always, be safe, and see you next Sunday at 7 p.m. right here on 55 KRC, the talk station.